Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Peace is not merely a distant goal that we seek, but a means by which we arrive at that goal." The following reflection is a tribute to Dr. King as a man of faith who was committed to peace. This selection is a part of a series recorded in Memphis, Tennessee, in the spring of 2008, the 40th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King. Thank you for visiting www.explorefaith.org. Dr. Marcus Borg, Hunder Professor of Religion and Culture at Oregon State University. A renowned Jesus scholar with the highest of national and international credits and praise, Dr. Borg has written many books, including his widely known Meeting Jesus Again for the First Time and Reading the Bible Again for the First Time. His most recent works are The Heart of Christianity, The Last Week, and Jesus Uncovering the Life, Teachings, and Relevance of a Religious Revolutionary. Dr. Borg's work has been translated into 9 languages. He lectures extensively throughout North America and overseas. Thank you for joining us at www.explorefaith.org.
This is Marcus Borg, and I'm honored to be part of this series of tributes to Dr. Martin Luther King on the 40th anniversary of his death. And what I want to talk about in my time with you is the many ways in which Dr. King resembled Jesus, or his indebtedness to Jesus, if you would prefer. Now, of course, there are huge differences, 19 centuries, and all the difference between the ancient world and the modern world. Moreover, racism was not an issue in the ancient world. But in spite of those differences, there is so much that Dr. King learned from Jesus, and so many ways in which their passions were similar to each other. Let me begin with the most obvious one, namely Martin Luther King's commitment to nonviolence. He regularly cited Jesus' passage from the Sermon on the Mount to love your enemies, to love our enemies. But beyond a commitment to nonviolence, Jesus also taught strategies of nonviolence, namely strategies of nonviolent resistance. And so it wasn't just the commitment to love one another, but also to try to change the world by resisting nonviolently the powers of evil. Some examples from Jesus that people may or may not know about. Jesus did public demonstrations, like entering Jerusalem in a pre-planned way on a donkey, which symbolized a king of peace who would banish the war horse and the chariot from the land. Or specific teachings of Jesus that are familiar to us, but which we may not be aware were strategies of nonviolent resistance. For example, from the Sermon on the Mount, if someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek. Now, what's significant about that passage is that it specifies the right cheek. In that world, people use their right hands to strike people. And if you try choreographing this at home, you realize the only way you can strike somebody on their right cheek with your right hand is a backhanded slap. And a backhanded slap is the way a superior treats an inferior. A manager treating a peasant or a worker that way, a steward doing the same. So the saying in Matthew reflects a situation in which a superior has backhanded an inferior. Now, in that setting, if you turn the other cheek, the person cannot continue hitting you with a backhanded slap. If they want to hit you again, the only way it will work is with an overhand blow. And that's the way you treat an equal in that world. So Jesus saying, in the context of resisting evildoers nonviolently, is a way of consternating the oppressor, if you will. The only way the oppressor can continue the beating is by treating the person as an equal. with an overhand blow. Or, in the same context, that famous saying of Jesus, if someone requires you to carry their pack for a mile, go the extra mile. The situation referred to here is a practice of Roman imperial troops who could require a civilian, a peasant, to carry their gear for a mile. And because Roman imperial troops had been abusing that privilege by sometimes making a civilian, a peasant, carry their gear, 50 pounds or so, for a day or more, not only exhausting them, but leaving them many miles at home, the Roman Empire put a limit on how far a given civilian could be required to carry the gear of a soldier, namely 1 mile. So Jesus is saying, if a Roman imperial soldier asks you to carry his gear for 1 mile, go ahead and carry it a second mile. And now that's not about being super nice. It's about getting the Roman soldier in trouble by carrying the gear beyond the permitted length. And you can almost imagine a comic scene in which a Roman soldier has to wrestle his gear back from a peasant who's saying, no, it's fine, I'll go another mile. And the penalties for a Roman soldier who allowed a peasant to carry his gear more than 1 mile were really quite stringent. The point being that not only did Martin Luther King learn a commitment to nonviolence from Jesus, but both had specific strategies of nonviolent resistance. Let me mention another way in which the life of Martin Luther King in some ways was like the life of Jesus. In the last 3 years or so of Dr. King's life, he expanded his campaign of nonviolent resistance to include a passion for economic justice, as well as to include public protest against war, and of course specifically the war in Vietnam. Now, opposition to war was very much part of the message of Jesus. In fact, his followers for 3 centuries understood Jesus to have forbidden participation in warfare. This is a time of early Christian pacifism. And another great passion of Jesus' life was a commitment to economic justice, which means everybody should have enough, not as the product of charity, but as the result of justice. And of course, this is built right into the Lord's Prayer, "Thy kingdom come on earth as it already is in heaven," followed immediately by the bread petition, daily bread. Everybody should have enough, and that's what the world would be like if God were king and the powers of this world were not. And so, in Martin Luther King's passion for economic justice and opposition to war, we see once again how he continues in the tradition of Jesus. Another thing I want to mention, I think both Jesus and Martin Luther King were mystics. Now, a mystic is a person who has vivid and typically frequent experiences of God. Jesus clearly was one of these. He had visions, he had a sense of intimacy with God, and I don't need to detail that. Where we see this most clearly in the life of Martin Luther King is what is called his kitchen table experience, which happened in the context of the Montgomery bus boycott in the mid-1950s. And it happened at a time when King had received several death threats, and he was, you know, such a young man at that point, 26 or 27. He was weary. And he tells us that he was sitting at the kitchen table in his home in Montgomery one night near midnight, praying desperately to God. And then he heard a voice that basically said to him, "Martin, stand up for righteousness." And the voice continued, "I will be with you always. I will never leave you alone. Never leave you alone. No, never alone." And King referred to that experience a number of times in his speeches and sermons over the year. This is a mystical experience that gave him courage and the willingness to keep on keeping on. There's a marvelous book by a German woman theologian called The Silent Cry, and the author's name is Dorothy Soley. And the subtitle of the book is Mysticism and Resistance. And it's a study of the way in which the experience of God or the sacred oftentimes becomes an empowering source of resistance to the way things are and advocacy of another way. And I see this in Dr. King's life. And perhaps the final thing I want to mention comes out of my own experience of almost being done reading the 3-volume-long biography of Martin Luther King by Taylor Branch. I'm nearing the end of volume 3, which all by itself is almost 1,000 pages long. And it covers the years 1965, basically from the Selma events, through 1968 and the assassination of Martin Luther King. And in addition to being a fascinating and compelling read, what I've been struck by again and again and again while reading that book is the extraordinary pace of Martin Luther King's life. All the meetings, the red-eye plane flights, the fundraising events, speech after speech, troubleshooting organizations. I mean, the pace of his life left me breathless, and it's breathtaking as well. And I was struck by the fact that Martin Luther King's public life involved him pouring himself out of his loyalty to Jesus and his passion for a different kind of world. And that pouring out of his life through the relentless pace of his life had to be utterly exhausting. And yet he kept on keeping on. And in that pouring out of his life, we see his life as a sacrifice, not just his death, his assassination, but in a way the whole of his public life leading up to that was a sacrifice that he offered up to God and as a gift to all of us.
This reflection was brought to you by explorefaith.org, a nonprofit ministry for anyone seeking a path to God. Please visit us at our website, www.explorefaith.org.